environmental health specialist with Clark County Public Health.
I'm Allie Booker. I teach at Kansas High School, and I just spoke to reduce waste in schools.
I'm Rich McConaughey. I'm the City of Vancouver representative, and my day job is working with as an environmental resources manager for City of Vancouver.
I'm Alan Jessica, and I'm a retired school teacher and military officer, and been with the Solid Waste Commission for quite a bit of time and enjoying chairing it, and glad to have everybody here. Chris?
I'm Chris Prothero. I represent Southwest Vancouver, and my Monday through Friday job is I'm a laboratory technician for a private medical clinic in Estee Park.
I'm Steve Willis. I represent North Clark County, and my solid waste connections for 4 years. I was the Deputy Director for Integrated Waste Management for the City of San Jose.
Hello, Chuck Harmon with Clark County Public Health. I'm the Program Manager in Environmental Public Health, and right now my responsibilities include the Solid Waste Enforcement Program and solid waste operations for the county.
Kim Harless with Clark County Public Health and Solid Waste Operations.
I'm Jenna Williams, and I'm the Office Assistant for Solid Waste and Environmental Outreach.
Okay, glad to meet the panel. Would you, anybody here like to tell us who you folks are, and if you represent somebody, tell us. If you're just here to see what funny people do on Thursday night, let us know.
I'll start. Frank Dick, City of Vancouver Wastewater Engineering Supervisor. I'm here to support the initiative for land application and solid waste permit with the city.
I'm Steve Wilson. I'm a soil scientist with Brennan Caldwell, and I'm assisting Frank with his permit application.
Steve Gilmore with Republic Services.
I'm Jan Scott. I'm with Clark County Public Health, overseeing the environmental public health programs.
Good. Mike Davis, Solid Waste Operations, Clark County.
I'm Tanya Gray. I work for the City of Vancouver in the Solid Waste Department.
And I'm Sally Fisher. I'm with Clark County Public Health, and I work with Solid Waste and Environmental Outreach, and anyone who can relate.
Well, I'd like to thank all the staff for, doing your thing, putting this all together, especially Kim for the food and the agenda, and would you take a minute to look over the minutes from May 4th and see if there's anything that strikes your mind? You have to have a better memory than I do to remember what happened on May 4th.
Oh.
Snowbird or something.
Yeah. So I consider excused absences is just, I don't hear anything whatsoever. So we do, so for Scott, Warren, and Brandon today, that would be considered unexcused. And I think there's only two unexcused absences in a 12-month period. So there are, at this point, then a few individuals that we will need to contact.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, I guess we can go to the agenda then. Updates from Clark County Public Health, Chuck?
I'll start with Janice Cox. We'll talk about update everyone on the solid waste program manager recruitment.
Yeah, so we, with the recruitment, we made an offer to Travis Denton. He has accepted the position. He starts August 28th. Thank you to Rich for participating in our interview panel. I don't know what else he's right now. He's from the city of Beaverton, but he does have experience previously with Pierce County doing very similar work.
What county?
What?
What county was he with?
Pierce.
Oh, yeah, Norm. Mm-hmm. So he's used to Washington, rigmaroles, and blah.
Yes, and he grew up in Battleground.
Okay. The prodigal son comes home.
Exactly.
There we go. Thank you very much. Go ahead, Chuck.
So a couple things I just wanted to cover under updates. A pretty significant thing is that the coordinated prevention grant that comes out of the Model Toxics Control Act, they actually now call that the local, they renamed it the Local Solid Waste Financial Assistance Fund, so that people make it longer, but so that people who didn't know a CPG meant. But basically, that all of those funds are in the state capital budget. So on the midnight hours or whatever of late June, the legislature did pass the operating budget, but not the capital budget. And then I think they were still around in their third session later that week, but before the third session closed, the third session, the legislature also was trying to find a way to create some legislation to deal with a Supreme Court decision called the Hearst decision. I think we talked about that in the past. It had to do with, it was a suit filed in Whatcom County. And I won't go into the details of that at the moment, but basically, that because they couldn't settle on that, they did not pass the capital budget. So right now, and still, they don't have any time, we don't know any specific time frame. The legislature was not called back by the governor, has not been called back yet. Capital budget has not been signed. That funds are, you know, the waste resources, which are the environmental outreach screen program, solid waste operations, our solid waste enforcement program, and the site hazard assessment program. The other important aspect of that capital budget is that because it has, until it's actually passed and signed by the governor, any time work that we do it's not until it's signed that we can charge against it. So right now we're operating off of existing funds and potentially reserve funds if that doesn't get reconciled in the long term. And so we're working, and the leadership's working to figure out what happens. Part of this is wrapped into, obviously, this situation is wrapped into, we've made some changes to our tipping fee increase proposal. That's on the agenda for later. I'll go into more details about that. But that's a pretty significant thing that they did not pass that budget. But everyone is continuing to work and serve the county in the interim. So that's really all I have at this point.
Now, those funds, are they earmarked? They come from garbage collection.
Well, MATCA funds are funded through a tax on gasoline. And because gas prices have remained low, that fund has been, in fact, you know, we took cuts in the last biennium. We were anticipating, Ecology has outlined the funds for the grant. We talked to that at the last SWAC meeting and showed you those figures. Right now that's been what we've been anticipating for cuts to the grant. But so we've already talked to you about that. But this is where they haven't even signed the capital budget. we still expect that that would be the result, that we would still get the funds that we've seen in tables from ecology for all the counties. But again, until it's actually signed, we can't spend any money towards it. We still have money from the state for that.
Thank you. Go ahead.
That's really the
way I have at the moment. So I just had a few little things. Our master composter recyclers have been pretty busy at all kinds of community events, and they'll be at the Clark County Fair. So if you happen to be there, say hi to them. Maybe learn something new about composting. Also, the Green Business August Morning Blend is coming up on August 17th from 8 to 9 a.m. And I'll pass this around some information. It's going to be at Cadet, which was our 2017 Large Business Green Business of the Year. So it'll be pretty exciting. And then, as you know, the Recycling Day events, they've been kind of going through a transition, scaling them down. So I brought some data about this year's events as well as last year's for comparison. So there was about a 44% decrease in participation from last year to this year, but we did about the same amount of advertising. However, we did include a message about how there's year-round options available, and they can go to Recycling A to Z to find those year-round options. We also opened up the drop-off box at Central Transfer and Recycling. So our hope was kind of that people get the message that they don't necessarily need to come to these single day, once a year events in their community, and that they have year-round options. So maybe that 44% decrease was due to that, but that's what I hope. And Camas decided this year not to collect garbage at their event, and we did reduce the number of events this year by one. Block Farm was the most popular last year, but this year was only the third most popular. Again, I think because of opening that facility at Central Transfer. Whereas electronics was the most popular this year, which makes sense. We did collect what we consider peripheral electronics, so electronics that are outside of the eCycle Washington program. So those are still kind of hard to recycle in this area, but also elsewhere in the state and even the nation. So that's just a continuous problem that is an area maybe we can help improve. So anyways, I just put together some information. And if you have questions, feel free, or you can ask me afterwards.
So do you think hazardous waste, eliminating that, is impacting attendance?
I didn't put in we stopped. So 2015 was our last year doing the hazardous waste. But I don't know if that is a reason for this year's decline, but it was a reason for last year's, like that there was a decline. But there was also increases as well, alternative events, because of Oxfam and elsewhere. But attendance at the transfer stations has gone up significantly. We've also done promotion of those facilities.
Any other discussion?
I almost forgot to note on that. I know we normally send out the quarterly report for solid waste enforcement, and so we haven't done that. We'll get that out via email. And then there's always more detailed inspection reports. It's a large old file, so it's hard to email, but we'll have that available for next staff meeting. All that work's been done. That grant for the last grant cycle has been submitted and closed.
Anything that stands out that we should know about?
I did put together a PowerPoint presentation with just some fun pictures and highlights if there's time available. Maybe we can add that to the end of the agenda.
Okay. We always like your pictures anyway.
And we're done.
And I guess just moving forward for next year, we're kind of thinking that everything's still tentative with the CPG grant and whatnot, is that the county will continue to support the cities that run their own events, but we will be not necessarily staffing them or being the lead for those events anymore. So
City of Richfield and Yakul, they put on their own robust events, and so we would come and help help coordinate to improve like recycling options at those events. But for cities that don't lead their own events, we'll probably just continue those events at those in those communities, but continue to promote the year-round options. So we'd like to move from reasonable events to having year-round availability.
You're all through the chat?
Yeah.
Okay. City of Vancouver.
Hello.
Hello. Oh, back up there. Yeah. You can't hide. This is the teacher's meeting.
So just two quick updates for you tonight. These are specific to the City of Vancouver. I thought I'd let you know that our spring coupon program, each resident in the City of Vancouver gets two coupons to dispose of yard debris and one for up to four tires in their garbage bill, or if they're an online bill recipient, then we send them an email that they're available and they request the coupons and we mail them out. So at the end of June, we concluded that program, and I thought I'd just share the statistics with you. Overall, compared to the previous year, the program was relatively flat. The costs were about level. We had roughly $57,700 in total costs with that program for yard debris last year, and $58,200 this year. That's the cost to dispose of yard debris through that program. Last year we had 2,775 participants. That's how many people came in and redeemed the coupons. And this year, 2,894. So a little bit of an increase, but not a lot. We collected 5,700 cubic yards of yard debris this year, and 5,900 last year, so a little bit down in cubic yards. For tires, 745 last year and 831 tires this year. So just so you know what a spring coupon program brings in. Then I wanted to update you on our RAP program. You may remember we talked about RAP a while back here. It's our regional initiative to try to get folks to recycle not just plastic bags, but all the plastic flexible wrap that is around their paper towels or their toilet paper. It's beyond bags, we like to refer to that. It's very important that we keep this material out of our curbside carts because it tangles in our processing equipment. So we try to encourage people to take it back to the grocery store. Safeways and Fred Meyers are participating in that. So earlier this year, in February, the City of Vancouver got an AmeriCorps volunteer to help us grow that program. His name is Zach Leonard, and he went out to several of the Safeways and worked with them to accept material not only from residents, but also add other businesses to their mix. So seven of the Safeways agreed to be hubs for other small businesses that have plastic film but can't put it in their commercial recycling cart and don't generate enough so they can send it back to a distribution center. So they were basically, these businesses were able to leverage the programs that Safeway and Fred Meyer have in place. And because Safeway and Fred Meyer earn revenue from that material, they're willing to accommodate that. So we were very thankful that Zach was able to expand that. We probably have about 80 businesses among all of those seven Safeways that are willing to participate that are bringing material to him. And he checks in on them and sees how things are going. He's also he went to special events and he talked to over 100 people about flexible film and plastic bag recycling. So just getting that message out there so we can change the behavior of folks and also let them know that plastic bags shouldn't go in your cart, they should go back to the store. So he's concluding his project middle of this month, but he's going to come back and serve another term of AmeriCorps service. So he'll be with us starting September 1st for phase two of that project. And we're hoping to expand on that and maybe even dial in a little more with the schools and their TREX program. That's all I have for you tonight. Thank you.
Quickie question.
Yeah.
The H&H and the people that took your debris, are they pleased with the program? They came out okay?
Yeah, when we offer the contract up, they always bid, so they seem pleased with it, and we work very closely with them in case, if any issues arise or concerns come up, we work with them to resolve it. But yeah, no complaints on either side.
Good business.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you. Waste Connections. We have anyone here from Waste Connections tonight? We'll have to get on Scott. He's out celebrating.
He's losing vote for next.
Okay, we are working hard. Yeah, and early birds too. I heard they go out a couple hours earlier. Can you imagine having to do that in 104 degree heat? Oh. Okay. Let's talk. I guess we go to item number three. We got the City of Vancouver land application solid waste permission or permit. Melissa?
Is this the magic clicker? Recorded. Do we have a?
You can use my mouse.
Oh. All right. I'm kind of a control freak, so I do like to progress my own slides. Okay. Thank you. Yeah. Thanks. So first, I would like to thank you all for having us here today and having this as a forum for public hearing per se for our solid waste application. Also, I would like to thank Frank Dick and Sue Wilson for being here today to represent the city, and also Brennan Caldwell Engineering Firm to answer more technical questions if they arise that I may not be able to answer. So thank you both for being here this evening. So the City of Vancouver owns and operates what's called an industrial pretreatment lagoon. It's adjacent to the old Roofner landfill. For those of you who've been on SWAC for a while have heard about Roofner, so just for scope. It's located at 2920 Northwest Lower River Road in Vancouver, and this lagoon is designed to pre-treat high-strength wastewater from three industrial food processing facilities in Vancouver: Frito-Lay, which produces is a snack manufacturer, Northwest Packing Company is a fruit packing company, and also Great Western Malting, which produces grains and malt for beer manufacturing here in Clark County. They also occasionally will receive trucked in material from Chehalis Dairy Gold Lagoon, or Dairy Gold Solids, so will be dumped in that lagoon as well. So it's only food waste. There is no sewage sludge going in here, so we'll reiterate many times that this is not biosolids, but I just want to reiterate that it is only food-grade materials. On June 2nd, the City of Vancouver submitted their land application permit to Public Health, and the city is seeking permit approval to land apply dredged solids from the lagoon onto city-owned property. There are six parcels in total that grand total 160.9 acres, so quite a vast amount of property that they own, and it's primarily farmed for grass and winter wheat. They do have in their lease that it could produce berries in the future or at some point, but at this time that's what they're currently growing there. And they want to do this in accordance with Washington Administrative Code 173-350-230, which is the land application portion of the code. So this is really a small niche of opportunities where public health would have an opportunity to permit such an application. For typical land use or land application, it would either be biosolids, which is sewage-containing materials. However, that's regulated by Department of Ecology. They go through the beneficial use determination process and grant that authority through Department of Ecology. Other materials, such as agricultural practice, waste, and manures, those would all be handled through Department of Agriculture under their fertilizer program, which is, I'll give you a little history later, so it's really a small opportunity for us to be able to issue this permit. So it's the first of its kind in our county. So yay, City of Vancouver. So this is just a little vicinity map, so you can just see this is Fruit Valley here and Lower River Road. The lagoon is here. Roofner Landfill is adjacent right here, for those of you who know where that is. And then the farm application area is just going to be right here, just to the north. So these are the two fields that they're proposing. This is Field A, and this is Field B. They do have a well that's located off-site that they've identified that they will not spray within that area. And then here's their lagoon as well. Sorry, that gets oriented there. And this is the Roofner, for those of you who are familiar with that. The City of Vancouver is proposing to land apply a minimum of 700 dry tons of solids to be applied to these farms. And it's referred to as the Vancouver Lake Lowlands, the Dugan Estates, is that correct? It's their fancy formal term. And all of the parcels are zoned for either a greenway or open space or agricultural wildlife. So it's appropriately zoned. And it should be noted that there are a total of 13 parcels that surround the farmland parcels, and all of those include light industrial and agricultural wildlife. So we're not having residential right there, so that's part of your consideration. So a little bit of history, as I mentioned before. So typically, agricultural processes and fertilizers are taken over by Washington State Department of Agriculture. So since 2000, actually, they've already been doing all of this. They've been using their lagoon waste, land applying it, and farming it. In 2016, Department of Agriculture said, oh, even though we've been permitting you for 16 years, we really shouldn't be because of these other conditions. And part of that is the storage limitation. So because they have storage in their lagoon, it makes it so that that Department of Agriculture cannot permit that type of activity. And that was determined from the Attorney General. So here we are today. They contacted us. They said, oh, we can't get this permit anymore. Ecology says it's not biosolids, and we have to go through public health. So we've been working with Washington State Department of Ecology, Chuck Matthews, very closely on this application. He's been my right-hand man in going through this. So this permit application is truly a request to continue the activities that they've already been doing at the city. So a big question that we get asked is this biosolids? And the simple answer is no. And here are some fancy codes. The Washington State Administrative Code 173 through 5100 defines biosolids as municipal sewage sludge that is a primarily organic semi-solid product resulting from the wastewater treatment process that can be beneficially recycled and meets all applicable requirements under 173.308 WAC. And it says biosolids includes a material derived from biosolids and septic tank sludge, also known as septage. And then when we go to Washington Administrative Code 173.308.005, it explains the use of terms of sewage sludge and biosolids. And sewage sludge is the solid, semi-solid, or liquid residue generated during the treatment of domestic sewage. And again, this is not domestic sewage, so therefore it is not biosolids. So we make that really clear, just because if you get questions from the public, biosolids is great for land application. It is a great fertilizer, a great soil amendment. It has to meet certain standards and tests and requirements that's all looked at through Department of Ecology. But from the public, the risk perception is a little scarier. So I just want to make sure and reassure you that you know that it's not biosolids. It's something totally different. So just really quickly, the City of Vancouver, they're only planning to do land application 2 to 4 weeks a year. It's going to be pretty short-lived in the application part. They will only do it during the dry seasons. They have to wait until the groundwater drops 2 feet below the surface. So it's going to be during the dry months of the year. And they're only going to do it between 7 a.m. and 5 p.m. Monday through Saturday. So that if there were any issues, it shouldn't go on crazy hours of the night with loud noises. They are hoping to begin this September so that they can stay on the every other year cycle for land application that they've already been doing. In the years where solids are land applied, they're going to be doing monitoring. So they're going to take 8 core samples of the legume and have that analyzed at a laboratory. Then every day while they're dredging, they're going to take samples of that material. And then as they're land applying, they'll be monitoring, making sure that there's no runoff, no odors, nothing that would create a public nuisance. They will keep lots of records that they will submit to public health and ecology. The annual report they'll submit to each department by the 1st of April every year. Public health and ecology have already reviewed the application. The city of Vancouver issued a SEPA determination of non-significance for this on July 5th, and public health determined that the application was complete at that time. We provided a review summary to the applicant and the consultant on July 26th. There were a couple things that were missing, or we had some questions and needed some gaps filled in. One of the items, Appendix K, there was some misnumbering in the page system, and they had deleted pages that weren't really, there was no useful information, but just for completeness and thoroughness, they did provide that to us. The plan will be updated to include ecology. The current version only said an annual report would be submitted to public health. And figure 2, the map shown initially, where it has the well indicated on it, will include the 100-foot sanitation zone. That way, the operator who's out there doing the land application has a visual where they should be avoiding. So we felt that was important. I think it's important for you as SWAC to know that Washington State Department of Ecology, they did provide us a letter that does support issuance of the permit, and that they did have a few comments on issuing the permit. Excuse me. One of the recommendations was that in the future, to perhaps restrict access, site access or public notification or signage if levels of E. coli exceed the biosolids Class A standards in the future. So that way they would have public notification so that the public doesn't go on to that property. And the other is as in the future, if there were to be future residential development or other kinds of development that they make sure that encroachment into that portion that's land applied is not impacted. So again, the application is complete, and it appears to address all the necessary aspects of the land application portion of the code, and public health staff recommend issuance of the permit once the consultant has provided public health with the updated figure in the solid waste management plan update. So the next step, according to the WAC, when the jurisdictional health department has evaluated all pertinent information, it may issue or deny a permit. Every solid waste application shall be approved or disapproved within 90 days after its receipt. So that's September 2nd in our world. So public health is requesting SWAC make a formal motion to approve or disapprove public health staff moving forward with issuance of the City of Vancouver's land application solid waste handling permit. So that is our ask of SWAC. Do you have any questions regarding the application?
The lagoon, this is the one with that has the rubber on the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And they just, so it really doesn't settle down through that. It's just held there and evaporates the liquid portion thereof, right?
Correct.
Okay. Just for, because I'm nosy, what's the depth of that effluent, the solid part that we're worried about, before they start to do their excavating or whatever, they get it out of there?
Say 4 to 6 feet.
Quite a bit then.
Yeah.
Okay. And how does that get transported from the lagoon to the, is it piped or trucked or how are you it seemed like you were going to spray this. So is it a pipe? You run a pipeline or what?
So we have a contractor on board that literally brings a boat that dredges the solids off the bottom of the lagoon, pipes it to a pump just outside of the lagoon off of Lafrenboy Road, and then pipe to the tractor that's doing the land application. So no trucks.
So there's no traffic generated by this or anything. It's a pipe job, just like a... Okay.
Correct.
And how about the odor when once it's out there sprayed?
I've seen the land application probably 3 or 4 times. It smells like a field. it's wet when they do the spraying. It's wet, so you get that kind of earthy smell, but nothing malodorous from it.
Thank you very much.
Nor from the lagoon.
700 tons sounds like a lot, though. Anyone else?
No history of impact on local wildlife or native vegetation?
No. It tends, after the application process and the grass is growing and stuff, it does attract birds, wild birds that people seem to enjoy in that area.
But no negative impacts?
No.
When I was out there, boy, the geese liked the lagoon a lot.
Yeah.
It was easier to walk all over the goose stuff. Okay.
They actually indicated that was probably one of the reasons for the elevated E. coli level was actually the migratory birds that spend time in the lagoon, not so much the actual waste itself. Yeah.
Have any environmental groups been providing input on this?
Public Health only received one comment regarding this application project, and it was from Washington State Department of Ecology, that they had reviewed the document. It was thorough and complete and appeared to meet all of the conditions of the regulation and that they supported.
And the effort. The detailed notification was provided to the newspaper and the results.
And on our website. Okay. Yeah, we did public notice and received no public comment.
I was wondering, some of what was in the reports, it looked like you do an analysis to determine that the volume of fertilizer being put out is sort of an appropriate agronomic rate so that it provides nutrition to the soils, builds up the soils without running off into the waters and stuff, right?
Right. The application rate is based on the nutrient content, and If there are 700 dry tons of material, we might apply 2 or 3 dry tons per acre, evenly distributed over the property. So it's designed to be an amount that will meet the needs of the crop, and there won't be any surplus that could lead to a runoff.
Other discussion? Do I hear a motion then?
Yes, please.
So moved.
Oh. Okay, a second?
A second.
Those in favor of passing having our Solid Waste Commission pass the proposed project, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? There you go, Melissa.
Thank you.
You bet. Thank you for your presentation.
Yep.
You always do a good job with it. This is an opportunity to walk your field. I like your inspection reports.
Yeah, not so many pictures in this one.
Okay, Chuck, we're going to move on to the
it's Mike, yeah. I'm solid with this guy, so
we'll give you a tip here.
Well, the application is right on my gym.
Okay.
There is some phosphorus, but very little potash.
Okay. Interesting.
So, we'll leave these guys back to the So what I wanted to do is just give you a brief update on the work that we introduced to you back at the last WAC meeting in May in regards to the tipping fee, the solid waste tipping fee proposal for an increase in the tipping fees that we have been working on. In response to the expected loss of grant funds that the department has been receiving from the Department of Ecology through what was, we all know, is called the Coordinated Prevention Grant. Since we met with the SWAC in May, just so you know, the other work we've been doing is we also presented a proposal to the Regional Solid Waste System Steering Committee and also to the Public Health Advisory Committee. That's the advisory committee that the department that Public Health uses to guide us in our work and priorities. In some cases, the groups were supportive. Solid Waste Steering Committee did make some recommendations around being able to talk and address issues around the total program funding, et cetera. So all of that was received well and supported, just like the SWAC had supported us back in May. We also did sit down, of course, I think since then, I forget when the date was, but the county manager, Mark McCauley, had been left, everyone's aware of that. And then we did sit down with Bob Stevens briefly in preparation for talking to the Board of Health, which is also, as you know, also the five members of the Board of County Commissioners for the Clark County. And again, he gave us some good feedback, and that was in preparing to meet with the board. Since then, Jim Rompeltes is the interim county manager. We were actually going to speak with him today, but that had to get postponed. We're meeting with him next week. So to also sort of have the same meeting we have with Bob and get his advice as we prepare to go to the board. What we plan to do is we have a regular monthly Board of Health meeting with the five members. At our last meeting, we let them know that at the coming meeting, which is on August 23rd, with them, instead of normal presentations and discussion about public health, we want to use some of that time, if not all that time, as a work session with them to go over this proposal. So that's when we expect to at least have time face-to-face with all five of the Board of Health members to go over the proposal. The big one change that we're to the proposal that we're working on is, given the capital budget situation and the fact that we don't really know when that's going to get signed and approved, our leadership looked at this and decided that we would revise our request. We have two scenarios still that we're looking at, but we really want to go to the board and ask to fill the gap of that entire grant for all the work that goes on in the programs. So the site hazard assessment, solid waste apportionment, the waste to resources work, the programs, et cetera, and work through solid waste operations. And I wanted to share a couple of quick updates. I haven't integrated all of this into the presentation yet. So basically our financial, this is a table that our financial officer put together that shows the two scenarios. The furthest left, and this is on the yearly basis of the grant amounts, the furthest left is what we were facing initially that we were looking at reductions. I think that's right, yeah. And then the second one is actually the scenario that we talked to you the last time, a 50% cut, additional cut to the grant funds. And then the furthest right column, and what that middle cut results in would be, as far as a request for an increase of the solid waste tipping fee, would be 84 cents a ton increase to the current rate, which would result in approximately about 4 to 5 cents at the curb for folks that get their garbage service. That's an estimate. The furthest right column is with no capital budget. There is one program that's not funded out of the capital budget. It's actually funded in the out of the operating budget, and they've already, for some reason, that program has their funding. And so that's a local source control program that does technical assistance to businesses around hazardous waste management. So that's the only funds that we know for certain that, we haven't got a grant agreement in place fully yet. They haven't signed it, but we're pretty sure that's going to move forward. So basically, that's like an 86% reduction from the historic levels that support the program. So basically, that would result in $1.43 additional per ton increase to the rate that we take to the board.
How much would occur?
And that would come to about 7 to 8 cents.
7 to 8%, 7 to 8 cents a month or per year?
Oh,
that's not per month.
Per month.
Per month. Per month.
Okay.
So the table that we showed the last time we updated, again, we also have, in the last presentation, we continued this. We got several other Washington counties that are the closest in population and other demographic factors, such as, and actually we just went to the two above us and the one below us, Thurston and then Spokane, Snohomish. Again, this is just a visual graphic illustrating how low, relatively low to those counties, both counties' current fee is. The red bar is the 50% proposal, the middle column of the figure I showed you earlier, and the right bar is for the for 100% replacement of the capital of those grant funds that support all those programs.
Chuck, we do 100% replacement of that, and those funds are finally passed to us. Would you just put those then in reserve?
So we're still working on exactly how we would manage that situation. At this time, when we were preparing to apply for the grant, knowing that the dollar amounts had been lowered, we worked with all the folks in the program and developed a prioritized list of work we would do under that. And I think if we replaced the funds, we would start some of that work and we would just look at what additional work we could do with it. We may not ask for all of it again when we get to the grant application stage if it comes to that. But until we're there, we just have to work through that. Like one example is we do feel it's important to move forward with the regional needs assessment analysis, and Mike's going to be the lead for us to help, and our contract's supposed to put that together. We don't want to wait for this all to settle, so we're going to move forward with that, even if we don't get the fee increase from the board. But ultimately, if that came, and to do that, we would use reserve funds for the program. But if the grant came back in place, we'd look at putting that back into the grant to fund the balance of the work that was needed in that.
But if we went to 100% of taking care of the funding like that, mm-hmm. would that jeopardize our grant program? Because, you guys have got this all covered already. Why are you coming to us for grants then? Don't they already look at what we already have and they say, you're not as needy as the next guy down the road, so you don't get it?
I don't know how they would look at that. I think, they would offer a grant amount and we would offer work what we would do and deliverables that we would deliver under that grant. So I think we would modify what we were originally planning to propose to do work that we would deliver on under the grant. And then again, it would take pressure off of us on the reserve fund and other funds that we use in the program. So I think we would still move forward. Again, we'd probably modify it, but I don't think it puts us at risk.
Yeah, but I'm afraid that you wouldn't be as hungry for it either. Go pursue those grants. If you already have the money in your pocket, you're not going to go pursue those grants to the extent that you would have if you didn't have.
I would like to add, just interject really quickly. I know that Kitsap County, Tacoma, Pierce, and King are all looking to move away from the CPG funding as their primary reliance upon a funding for programs that we run. So really, this would allow us the opportunity to have kind of a minimum functional standard so that we can maintain business as is. In the past, I've been working in solid waste now for 8 years. I've been with Clark County Public Health for 13. And there's ups and flows in everything, and budget tends to be one that definitely is ebbs and flows. But when I first started in solid waste, our CPG budget was $46 million a year for the state of Washington. This year, they're proposing $10 million. So we used to receive, the SWEO folks back when they were Public Works and all of that, $1.2 million a year from Ecology through the CPG grant funding. That is cut substantially. So losing these funds will lose our ability to maintain those minimum standards that we have. Having this be a base that we're relying on, and if extra funds are available, great, we could do additional outreach, we could do additional programs. We might finally be able to afford to have staff to be able to do our code update, which has needed update for over 20 years. So this allows us to maintain our programs at the level we are today, which is already cut substantially from where we were 5-10 years ago. As our county is growing, as our outreach network needs to grow, as our infrastructure needs to grow, we need to have staff who are able to help develop that infrastructure for our future. And so this funding really does support those efforts by keeping us having a good minimum basis so that we can keep our staffing to maintain the programs.
So what I'm hearing is you're trying to move to a more self-sufficient program rather than trying to be working around potentially partisan hostage-taking in an environment that we can't control up in Olympia. Is that pretty close?
Well, yeah, I think, again, that we were already talking about that before we were faced with some of the what we were learning about losing more grant funds.
Well, we were just
and now the capital budget not being passed.
Right.
So I think we were already, as a department, talking about how can we continue to support all the work, the good work that we're doing. But certainly the exigencies of the cuts and now, of course, the capital budget, we feel it's important to maintain it. Melissa was saying, but I do feel over the long term that we would continue to work towards a more self-sufficient program. But I do think ultimately that the amount of funds we historically got in the grant, I think we'd have to be strategic about it. There's no guarantee how MACA is going to survive in the future when gas prices continue to stay down.
We as a group couldn't even believe that this was programmed against gasoline,
MACA supports a lot of other stuff.
Well, it supports
environmental cleanup work in the state, etc.
We thought it was a garbage fee that was collected by the state and then just doled back to us, our fair share of it. But no.
Yeah. It's actually, let me go ahead and that piece right there. It's actually a tax on refined oil products, with gasoline as one. It's the major component. As oil has dropped, that's why you've seen this bomb drop out of this program. But I echo what Melissa has to say is that we did a lot of financial planning over the years to try to create this base if the grants went away. And unfortunately, the way CPI just was flat or declining over the last 7-8 years, our costs have continued to rise while CPI remained flat. And so now we're in a situation where that base funding just isn't sufficient to maintain staffing levels at a time when the county is growing like crazy. I mean, you're seeing tonnages through the roof. The transfer stations are bursting at the seams, literally. We can't keep up with the amount of trash that's coming in. And, you know, I'm inspecting the sites more. Melissa's having to go out more. It's just, you know, if you're going to plan for the future, you need that sustainable source. And most sustainable source that the other counties have is the tip fee. And so that's why we're here and why we're coming to you with this ask. And as you can see, the ripple through effect through both the city's contract and the what they call the Laredo Gallagher formula that the Utilities and Transportation Commission uses for franchises in the state, it comes out about 5 to 6 cents for every dollar the tip fee goes up at the transfer station for residential collection. So it's really minimal, that impact on the monthly fees that people pay for the garbage. The statutory responsibilities for our side of solid waste, which are under RCW 3658, that's where we're required to have the transfer system. And then 7095, that's the planning and program piece. So, you know, we're required to do this. We're allowed to set fees under 3658 that, you know, fund these programs. And that's where our statutory authority comes from. And this is, I think, what you're going to see throughout the state is they are going to move away from this when they can, because I don't feel that the legislature is going to continue to support solid waste as they have in the past. They've really started to focus on clean stormwater issues, and that's where some of this money is getting siphoned off of already. And then, you know, there's still all those cleanups out there. And so as these dollars have dwindled, you've got a lot of entities, you know, fighting for this. And in response to, will we still go after the grants? Absolutely. I mean, that'll be those additional programs or things we can't do, but the day-to-day business is still there. And so that's why we're here to talk about it.
Does Waste Connections have a problem with collecting more?
No, it'll be a basically they'll plug it into their scale house system, and it'll come out on the scale house ticket, and then it'll just pass right through this UTC formula and the city's contracts, and it'll just come out on their billing.
They won't get more because the amount is more.
No.
Any other questions? Thank you, Mike. Any other questions?
So, yeah, so we'll, like I said, we'll continue. We're also just gathering information to prepare for a meeting with the interim county manager next week, and then on the 23rd, meeting with the board. And, I think that's a public meeting, but it's not a meeting where they take comments.
Do you want to recommendation from us, which side of this, whether we go to the 50% or the 100%, if you go up there with our recommendation, it might help you out in getting this over with.
Well, you at the main meeting, and I haven't gotten this far with this, at the main meeting, you guys supported us moving forward with the fee proposal, and so we hadn't actually worked on a letter, but we thought about having a letter supporting it. But what we can do is finish updating the material and then pose a letter to you.
Well, I'd like to Steve last time brought out that it's better to take little bites at a time rather than one big fell swoop. So we should, you know, cuss and discuss maybe which way to go about that, because, you know.
Well, I mean, and you present a compelling argument for why you should ask for more. And it's based on the growth of the population of the county, the increased workload, and the loss of other funding sources, which have allowed you to meet your regulatory requirements. And, you know, to me, and like I said before, this is a very compelling graph. And the actual impact on folks at 7-8 cents a month is pretty negligible. I mean, most people aren't going to see it or say anything about it. And I also am an advocate of small incremental rate increases over a period of time to continue to deliver service.
Yeah, and one of the things we'll likely propose is potentially ask for, Jeff and I talked about this, sort of our finance guy, about potentially asking for a incremental annual inflation adjustment for it, too.
Well, I mean, part of it, if it's the tip fees, the volume of material moving through the system is going to generate additional revenue also.
Correct. I suspect we are coming into another peak.
Yeah.
The building will likely ease off, and a lot of the traffic is remodel, rebuild, and the tonnage increase is absolutely stunning.
Yeah.
So I think we're going to probably kind of do this, but even then it should. Usually it's a 1-to-1 ratio with population increase because it's pretty steady what residential folks produce it on a monthly basis. So once we get sort of out of this economic boom, it could come back down and then do this. And that's, I'm just hoping it doesn't do like this as it did at the financial crisis. But that's why you have a mixed basket of funding sources to work with. So we've got these set fees that are somewhat stagnant, but they're still going to be there. And then this will kind of do this.
Yeah, I completely agree. If we're talking a dollar and a half over a year, I drop that much in my couch cushions in a week. I don't see it as making an impact on people's monthly budgets or anything like that. And turning that, parlaying that into becoming more self-sufficient locally, that we know we can count on these services without outside finances, I can't come up with an argument against it.
We just heard today that the new water program in Portland is going to cost everybody $10 a month.
Yep.
So
yep,
this this is not even going to be a problem here. So.
And I want my clean water.
That's it. Okay. Should we just table it?
I don't think there's a motion that needs to be made. I think we did that last time around.
Okay.
We appreciate you guys keeping us informed. And as you know more, you'll tell us more.
Okay. Green neighbor, Sally? Oh, the bag lady.
The bag lady. I didn't want to. Well, good evening. I'm Sally Fisher, and I work in residential outreach, and I'm also the interim manager for the education and outreach group until we get our new person on board.
Welcome to.
Oops. Perhaps I don't know how to do this. There. Okay, so the Green Neighbor Program. What we aim to do is offer resources for a sustainable lifestyle. And that includes reduce and recycle, and it's pretty heavy on reduce and recycle because that's where we're at. But we also talk about the natural environment. We have news and events, green living, and volunteer opportunities. And all of this can be accessed through a website, and it's clarkgreenneighbors.org if anybody wants to check it out. So under reduce and recycle, we have all of these different categories. So we provide the information about the Recycling Day events. Recycling Done Right is how to recycle right, but it also provides information about cart tagging. So if you got tagged, you can go to the website under that and find out more about that tag. Our Recycling A to Z directory,
multifamily residence recycling is a fairly new category that we've added to help both property managers and residents of multifamily complexes know more about recycling, and we're going to be adding more to that. Repair Cafe, have any of you heard of that? We love the repair cafes where we have the volunteer fixers, and people can come from the community and get something that's broken repaired by a volunteer fixer rather than throw in the trash and replace it. Household hazardous waste, unwanted meds, thoughtful consumption is smart shopping and thinking before you purchase. We're really going to be focusing on food too good to waste over the next year. And Wastebusters is our little competition where people take a pledge, then they either try to reduce their food waste or remember to bring their reusable mug, and they can compete for prizes. And that's a three-week program that we do in the winter. Wild Watch is engaging citizens with wildlife, and I know everybody always says, I don't get it, you're in solid waste, what are you doing out bird watching? But the fact is that if people put chemicals out in their yards, it's very harmful to the birds, or if they spray the insects and the birds eat them. So it's kind of a fun way to engage people and get them involved, and then you can start talking about not using so many chemicals in the yard and in your home. And we have workshops and events such as our upcoming birthday party on October 15th, and we've got a guy who's bringing live owls and raptors, and we're going to talk about the impacts of chemicals on all of these creatures. So we think that'll be fun. In our news and events section, we have an extensive event calendar, and this is just a little screenshot. It's color-coded by the type of event. It could be, I know you can't read that, sorry. Community events or workshops, outdoor events, ways to get out, go for a hike, go bird watching. So we have that. It's our most popular page on the site. People love to go to this and find things they can do on the weekend. We have a newsletter that goes out to 6,500 people every month. And we do author talks, which are, we have a hard time finding authors, so we do them sporadically when people publish books. But it's usually on an environmental topic, and the author comes and he talks about the topic or she talks. And it's been really interesting and fascinating and very well attended. We had our natural garden tour last weekend. Did anybody make it to that? Or, but you knew about it, right? So this was my six-hour tour that I'm going to give you in like 30 seconds. This is dense planting to outcompete weeds. Beautiful home. It's fabulous. This person made these trellises out of old tire chains. They went and somebody gave them to him, Les Schwab or somebody. They were all broken, and then she built these really cool trellises. That's great. A nice place to sit out and enjoy your chemical-free yard. Birdhouses to attract your natural insecticides. These are plants to attract, it's really hard to read, to attract beneficial insects and birds as well. Very nice. And what you should really remember is to go out and sit in your yard, enjoy it, kind of get to know it, so when something's going wrong, you can fix it before it becomes a big problem and you have to use chemicals. So that was my six-hour tour. Our green living section, we have this little house on the website, and you can click on all the rooms and it'll give you ideas for things that you could do in rooms at your own home. For instance, click on the bathroom, it talks about toothpaste and different hair products that you can use that are better for the environment. We also touch on energy efficiency, water conservation, but not a lot. But we do have a page up there because we think it's just integral to sustainable living at home. So if we didn't have it there, it would be a huge gap. But none of us are experts at that. So we really rely on CPU and other agencies to help us when people have big questions about that. We have composting, pet waste. There's pet waste. And that was a program of clean water, but we've still left the pledges on the site so people can take the pledge to pick up after their pet. Oh, thank you. We have home assessments, and we wrote these in-house, and people can print them out, and they can walk around their house and maybe check on water conservation.
And so it's got all these questions you can go around and check off on the assessment to just see how you're doing, where you're at, and maybe things you could improve on. So we had that as well as environmental calculators. And the environmental calculators are all out on other sites, but it's like your ecological footprint. You can go in and take the little quiz and see about that. And people seem to really enjoy doing that. Lots of volunteer opportunities. We put everything on. We don't put anything from Portland on. We do for activities, but not for volunteers. We try to keep our volunteers in Clark County. But we do post, like for the Wildlife Refuge and all the different agencies that that need volunteers.
You do the city too?
Yes. Yes, of course. And so it's a lot of fun. This guy is a volunteer with our Master Composter Recycler program. Looks pretty happy about that. Natural gardening is also of huge interest, and we just did a major renovation of that section of the site, so there's a lot more information for people out there now. We have a demonstration site at Pacific Park, which is out on 172nd Street, I'm going to say this wrong, and 18th Street and 172nd Avenue, and it's northeast, so you got to go past first and then go on up. And we have 10 garden plots out there where we demonstrate different natural gardening techniques, and people can get ideas for plants they might want to put in their own yard that are climate friendly. Then, of course, we talked about the garden tour, and then we contract with the Master Gardeners, and they do different workshops for us on natural gardening and also include that in their training, because historically, the Master Gardeners have been kind of chemical heavy. So we've been working on them for years, and I think we're finally getting over the finish line, and they're doing a lot more natural gardening in their training. And I actually went through the training, wow, I shouldn't even tell you when, 2001, I think it was, and I've seen a huge change since then in what they're doing now. So that's really gratifying. And of course, we have our Recycled Arts Festival. We had that the last weekend in June. This is a Brazilian samba group, and they led our procession of the species, and that was just a really fun parade that kicked off Sunday morning. A lady making things out of old buttons. These are some great plant stakes. And everything has to be 75% recycled material. Although I have to admit, it's very challenging to tell when you're trying to like judge the entries to be at the festival, what is, what isn't. And here's some beautiful mosaic windows. So what's coming up for us? We have a shredding event coming up at Whole Foods on 164th on September 23rd. I've been getting so many phone calls from people who want to shred their documents that we finally partnered up with Whole Foods. We'll provide the truck, but they're providing the site and the staff. So, good partnership for us. We're looking into doing some treasure hunts, environmental questing, where people will go for like geocaching. Are you familiar with that? Where you use your GPS? But we wanted to have like messages in each box, environmental messages for people. And then we're going to add some kind of a litter pickup component to it, so they're picking up litter when they're out doing this treasure hunt. And I expect that to be kind of a summer event maybe for at the end of this next school year. I told you about our fifth birthday party. Robert Michael Pyle, who is an internationally renowned naturalist, is coming. And he has two new books. One is on butterflies and one is on Bigfoot. And now you're going to ask him, what are you talking about Bigfoot for? But the truth is, his book is all up in the Olympic National Forest, and it's all on the ecology and the environment. And Bigfoot's the hook. And I know we're going to get people in with Bigfoot, but we're going to talk about nature and how to conserve our natural resources. And then we're just getting ready to launch a new page on the website for our EcoFilm Lending Library. And we've been partnering with the Vancouver Watersheds Alliance, and they do a series, I think it's 6 films a year at the Vancouver Library that people can go see. And then after they've shown the films, they'll be available in this lending library for people to check out and watch at home or show at their church, or just so they don't make money on them, they can do whatever they want. So that's what's coming up. You have any questions for me? I hope I see your faces at some stuff.
I stopped by McDonald's today and picked up about 30 pounds of coffee grounds for my grandma.
They like it.
Well, they used to put them in nice little bags, and I said, don't you have any coffee grounds? And I'm in the sheriff's car, of course. And the guy gets the 30-pound garbage can and dumps it in there, and I got 30 pounds of that stuff.
Must be heavy.
Yeah, it was. Thank you very much, Sally.
You're welcome.
Okay. Kim, you've been sneaking in those carts again, huh?
Yes. So I thought I would bring back to you guys the results so far. Been crunching numbers. And here's the tag that we put on the carts this year. So you can go ahead and take one. We have some extras. So just a kind of a reminder, I'm sure you all are already familiar with the cart tagging project, though. So for the last 3 years, we've been going out to residential recycling carts throughout the county and take a quick peek inside the cart and just take looking just on the top. We're not digging through the carts real extensively, just taking a quick look. Seeing what's in the cart and giving them some feedback, like, hey, please don't put plastic bags in there. Or if they did an excellent job, we're letting them know, like, hey, looking good, you did great. We've done contests in the past. I'm excited not to do that this year. And, yeah, any questions about just the cart tagging before I move on? If you're not familiar with it.
How long is your going to do this for?
We'll see. So this was a program that was covered by the CPG grant. So kind of moving forward, it is one of our more expensive outreach programs. So we'll kind of have to reevaluate, you know, once we have a better understanding of our budget. It is a high priority outreach campaign though, because we are directly, you know, going towards that reducing contamination, and it goes towards our solid waste management plan goals, planning goals, and other goals.
Is there any particular things that you're seeing that can be addressed specifically, like the bags, biohazards, anything like that that you consider a bigger detriment?
Yeah, so we do have some problematic items that we'd like to focus on, which are the ones you see on the tag. So some of them are a very common and problematic item, like the plastic bagging wrap, like Tanya was explaining, they get all tangled up in our recycling sorting process. And then we also have some items like hazardous waste, sharps like needles, and light bulbs and such that we don't see very often, but when they are present, they do cause a lot of chaos. Glass as well, and glass isn't set on the side. And I'll kind of go over the numbers and what we found this year. So this was my group this year. So we have 10 temps that we hire on for the last 3 years, and they work in teams of two to go out together and look inside the carts. So they were a fun group this year. Well, they're always a fun group.
Mostly college kids?
Yeah, so they do get a lot of college kids. So starting like mid-May, we capture all those kids that have to come home college, you know, just need a summer job, just want a few extra dollars to have fun. So, because the campaign's only about a month long, so it's a good way for them to get. But we also get other people as well. It's a good thing. So, as I was saying, contamination, we kept seeing an increase in contamination. And so, this is a way to address that contamination. But also, what we found out last year, well, we were using the allocation study, which is a study that Waste Connections puts together according to our contract with Waste Connections to figure out the characterization of the recyclables that are coming in, like what percent by weight are cartons or glass bottles or laundry detergent or whatnot. And then that helps us calculate our recycling revenue. And so part of that study, they take a big sample, is part of that is the contamination or what they call the residue. And what I ended up learning was that that residue is not just contamination, which is what we were assuming when we were looking at that number, but it's also the amount of material that's just not making it through. So, you know, good recyclables that just didn't make it through the sorting process. Because it's mostly a mechanical process that happens. And so we were
not using these numbers correctly. So we found out in 2016, which was our first year studying the residue, was that our true contamination rate was actually at 7.6%. So you can see it's actually a lot lower. And we did do the residue study again this year, but the results aren't in quite yet, but they should be in any day.
Is that the letter I was in, where it's the end of the, you know, whatever, after they've done everything else, this is what the end is. That was interesting.
Yeah, so we will, so this year the allocation, the residue actually went up even more to 22.7%, but we'll find out from that study what the true contamination rate is. So hopefully it went down, but, and then Waste Connections also uses that.
Do you have a target contamination rate that you want to stay at or below?
I don't believe we do.
We don't have a target, but when we did the initial studies, we had anticipated 8 to 10% of true contamination. But, you know, the fact is there's a lot of material that we had expected that could have been captured that doesn't get captured. And I mean, you're talking a variety of papers, plastics, due to shape, size, whatever, it comes right out.
So would you consider that 10.6% reasonable?
Yeah, I'm concerned that the contaminant rate, the actual overall residue rate, is that high. But you know, like I said, this is a highly mechanical process. If you haven't seen it, you should see it. You know, everything that anybody can put in there and they think they can recycle, it's not all recyclable.
Sure.
I mean, shredded paper, for example, you know, yeah, you can consider recyclable, but not once it goes through that process. It just blows through.
Falls right down to the bottom.
Yep.
It's confetti at the transfer station.
And we thought, well, maybe if they put it in a bag, I mean, you know, it doesn't happen.
No, the equipment's not designed for it.
So this was our tag for the last 3 years. So you can see the differences. We just slightly modified and moved away from the prizes. And this is the back side. So we went, as you've seen, towards more picture-based. So a lot of the questions we get is, what is this? You know, what do you mean by this? Especially when we're calling things like clamshells, and we learned to more go towards pictures. And then I just wanted to remind folks, this CART campaign project, we studied the effectiveness of it, and the first year we did it, in 2015, we did see an improvement. So we haven't studied the effectiveness every year, because it costs money to do those kind of studies, but we did do it that first year, and we also did pilot it twice beforehand as well, and every time it showed that it was effective in reducing contamination. So this year, it was our largest campaign year ever. So every year I kind of bumped it up a little more to see how much our temporary workers can do. So it ran from May 15th through June 14th of this year. We did 32 recycling routes. So our first year we did 25, last year we did 30, and then we added two more this year.
How many total recycling routes are there?
I can't recall.
Just trying to get a sense of your sample size.
Mm-hmm. Well, we target about 20% every year. So our hope is in 5 years we've reached a majority, because, you know, there's move-ins and move-outs and the population's growing. But in 5 years we would have gotten to every area. And there are route changes, and we try to adjust for that.
Well, because you've got growth, and so you're adding residential population.
Yeah. That was my question too, because this thing keeps going up and up and up. Is it because maybe our system is not able to keep up with the increased volumes? You were mentioning that, you know, maybe we should. Is there a better way to do this?
Well, I think part of it is, you know, technology changes also, and the line is now going on 10 years old, and eventually it's going to have to be replaced. And, you know, that one we planned out, I think it came in around 5 mil, something like that. And so it won't be a cheap fix. They are looking at adding a fewer new sorting material, or sorting stations, I should say, to better capture some of the flattened materials that pop through. And plastics, you know, metals are usually captured, but, you know, it's usually flat plastics that really get through, and better capture in mixed waste papers. So, you know, but each of those, you know, several hundred thousand dollars, you know, to add these components. And
I was just worried that instead of, you know, let's say we were running 60% of something through and now we're running 80% through, we're going to have a bigger drop off at the end than you did putting less stuff through the system.
Yeah, and we've allowed them to run some material out of Eugene. We're already starting to talk about not allowing that anymore. That added a second, you know, they were had about enough to run a shift that didn't happen. By bringing that up, then they were able to run two shifts. But I'm getting concerned that our volumes are up enough now that we don't want that material and the wear and tear. And so we're kind of talking about, you know, what does that look like? But we can't just cut Eugene just off coal. They're not prepared to sort it down there. And Portland metro capacity in general is pretty well maxed right now. So I gotta say that this to me is one of the most important outreach projects that we're doing. I'm hoping that we can maintain it in one shape or another to keep this education going, because it does tie directly to this contamination problem that we've got. And it's, you know, whether people like it or not, we do get a lot of phone calls. Many of them are unhappy campers, but it woke them up. You know, and maybe they won't throw that hose in there the next time, or the Buddha statue, or... I mean, I can go down the list of things that have been thrown in here that just blow you away.
Kim and I've seen it.
You know, so it's important that we get this data and then we tie it into what we're doing in the facility and how we've been to tailor our other outreach programs to get that information back to them.
Thank you. More, Kim?
Yeah. So we reached so 32 routes is about 26,000 customers. We tagged 18,000 of those, which is about 69%. Not everybody sets out their cart. There were a few routes that we weren't quite able to finish. So the set out rates industry is about 80% is like the rule of thumb, but I've seen lower numbers in our past years. So I printed this out because it might not be able to be seen very well. But going off your question, so again, we're seeing, so this is the number of carts that were tagged for. So every cart could be tagged for multiple items, right? So 27.6% of carts were tagged for having plastic bags and wrap in 2016. So I wanted to show past numbers and present. So I'm going to move forward, though, to the 2017. And again, in the draft, I'm still finalizing the numbers. There's like one part where my check is like 10 off. I'm like, where are these 10 tags coming from? So I just want to make sure that you guys know these are preliminary numbers. And my plan is to put together a more formalized report about the past 3 years and kind of what's great about this campaign is you can really see what people are doing. At the transfer station, it's kind of like this big pile, and we can see by weight what people are doing. So what's nice about the campaign is that we can see by per person what people are doing. So how many households are making these errors or are doing this. We can actually study people's behavior through this campaign so we can better adjust our system. So 30% had got that looking good tag, which is great. So at least a third of our residents are doing a great job recycling. But 30% are also including what we are calling hard plastic packaging, just like salad containers and those deli clamshells.
and to-go boxes and whatnot, the plastic ones.
Of course, they hear that you can do that.
Yeah, that
actually. Yeah. Uh-huh. You know, you have to take it down there. They,
yes.
Waste Connections doesn't want to haul it down there.
No. and we are still seeing some plastic bags and wrap, which I don't know. Yeah. So, I mean, the trends are pretty much the same. We've also added extra categories that my MyCruise tag. So you'll see more categories here than what's on the tag. It's because MyCruise, they got these crazy spreadsheets, and they captured more information. So, as an example, they use these expensive spreadsheets, and they circle with everything that they found. So, does anybody have questions about what we found in the carts?
Yes, actually. And you and Chuck, you mentioned you're going to get sick of me talking about this with sharps.
Yes.
0.03% mm-hmm. out of, is it 33,000?
Yes, I think so. Okay. Or, well, no, 18,000.
18,000, okay. So that's still a considerable number of incidents mm-hmm. that you're finding those. Okay. So I had a really good conversation with Sharon Wiley the other day, and she is on board with helping to find a way to help get these sharps disposed of in a safer manner than people throwing them in the garbage, because driving to one of the transfer stations is simply not convenient for most people. So.
Yeah, I know our Clark County Public Health is really supportive of trying to find some way, and it is a solid waste issue at the transfer station. And I know the larger department does have interest. Right.
Sharon's actually considering talking to the sharps manufacturers into developing a stewardship program.
Yes, that would be great.
Yeah, it's conversation, but it's the beginning of a conversation. She would actually like to have a roundtable discussion that I'm kind of trying to rattle around in my brain to get some different folks involved from every facet of this to make this problem as least intrusive as possible.
Yes,
definitely. Yes, yes. Legacy's worked with Stericycle, and they do the complete sharps thing now. You know, they come in with their own containers, the hospital uses them, and every week they empty it, they train them out, and the hospital staff does not use them at all. You can throw anything in there that even, you know, looks like it's contaminated or it's sharp, and it's all done on contract now.
And just to clarify, on here you'll see other garbage and garbage as two different categories. Garbage is like literally like a bag of garbage. Like somebody put garbage in there instead of putting it in their garbage can. And other garbage is like random, miscellaneous things that didn't fit in any of these categories. So like someone found a fake chicken. I don't know. They wrote fake chicken. So that would be other garbage. Random stuff like that.
We had a category for that, but we did it, remember?
So moving on, these temporary workers also worked on the whole Hope Family part of the same car company. So they went to every single multifamily complex in Clark County and inventoried what carts were there and also reapplied decals, because for the last few years we've been putting up signs and decals to try to make sure there's messaging right at the cart where people are making these choices. So at least that is there. So every complex in Clark County has had this. And then what was new this year is we did door-to-door outreach. So our crews went out to complexes and actually knocked on the doors with permission from the manager and talked to people about recycling and got some feedback from them. And they also provided every resident, whether they were home or not, with a recycling guide about how to recycle. Because there's certain challenges in multifamily, such as bulky waste. If people are moving in and out, they have furniture. There's other issues that are specific to multifamily. So we tried this new pilot program to try to get right at it, right to the people. So we visited 41 complexes, which is about 4,000 units, received those recycling guides. And there were 510 one-on-one conversations with our temporary workers and Moosic County residents. So those are really valuable. So one thing we did this year was try to see how these crews were being utilized. Spent nothing for you guys, but I mean, this is all funded, so it's kind of important for us. So these crews worked, you know, nearly 60% of the time on car tagging, and then 33% on multifamily, and then other projects. They did some business outreach as well. So for those of you that were here last year, one thing that I brought up was they were able to analyze the fullness of the carts, because as you know, in Clark County, we pick up every week for recycling, but many of the cities, it's every other week. So city, I use City of Vancouver as an example in these slides. So this is important. When we're going to be doing a system study soon, and one of those things that might come up is if we should be picking up every single week for recycling. So this is kind of a way for us to see people's behaviors. So it's pretty similar between weekly and every other week. So what you can take from that is if we move to every other week, I mean, it's the same. So it doesn't seem like it would really affect things too much. Maybe.
What is UGA?
The urban growth area. So all the areas that are serviced outside of the city.
Okay.
But it also includes.
I'm an unincorporated Clark County, and we get recycling service every other week.
Okay.
So you're on rural service.
Yeah. Rural. Okay.
Yeah. So one of the things, too, I wanted to point out is that most of these were in areas where there's high concentrations of homes. You get out in the rural areas, and there's a lot of safety issues for having the workers get out, and the stops are more distance.
Okay.
So that's why it's kind of set up the way it is.
Okay.
Yeah. And we won't be going into rural areas for our time.
Okay. Well, I've seen tags on some of my neighbors' carts.
Oh, the
Oops
tag?
Yeah, I assume the person in the truck is tagged.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Waste Connections has their own Oops tag that's kind of similar to ours, but it's more focused towards like service issues.
Okay.
But also problematic. Like, because they're not able to look at every single cart before they unload it. But if there's one that's just overflowing with something that's not supposed to be there, everyone's tagged. Because it's obvious. Yeah, so we did this last year. So just now we have 2 years of sample data to be able to know moving forward.
Any questions for her? Thank you. As usual, you dotted all the I's across all the T's.
To keep this materials, the correct materials in those carts.
Yes. Yeah, what's nice about the cart tagging, because for the outreach and education, you want to get to the point where people are actually making a decision.
Right.
We can't get to people's kitchen or their, you know, garages. The closest we can get is to the cart. And this is like as close as possible. And that's why I think this campaign is really important, because where many people do make that bigger choice.
Yeah.
And that's why we get a lot of calls too. Actually see it and recognize it. And
do some areas have certain months of the year that they do it every other week, and then Christmas and then other times they do it every week, or
no,
it's all one way or the other, every other week or every day.
Yeah.
Or, yeah, every other week or every week.
I have a pink one and I get it half full every week, so I only put it out there every 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm. They're coming out with a pink truck now.
Oh no.
Oh, yeah.
He got one?
It's on the roof.
A Waste Connection. I don't know which routes it's going to be on.
That's cute.
Do they draw names as to who has
the
pink truck? You're going to drive that thing today.
You just see the big burly guy with his little pink truck.
As Kim was saying, maybe it's a new truck. They actually wanted to go drive it.
Yeah.
I'm going to
share it with
my sister-in-law's brother. My sister-in-law's sister-in-law's brother is the union rep for Waste Connections. Great big guy, motorcycle, da-di-da, tattoos all over. And he's the union rep for...
Teamsters guy.
For the Teamsters there, so that's it. Okay.
I do have one more thing. I put together a landfill tour. I know you've been requesting that. And we'll be touring Finley Buttes as well as Wasco County on August 23rd. And it'll be from 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. So it'll take the whole day. We'll travel out there. So let me know if you want to attend. I'll send out an email as well. But it's August 23rd from 7 to 5. And you can join our carpool and tag along with us. We're really, really limited on hours, so we're just going to do like a sack lunch. So bring your lunch. But they told me that we'll definitely be able to see like it in operation. We won't just be like standing on a hill looking down or something like that. We'll be in there, seeing what's going on.
If you haven't done it, I would recommend it. I don't remember what I'm doing on the 23rd, but it's definitely, and there are neat people to go in the car with, too.
Yeah.
I remember when we went to Finley Butte the first time, nobody had ever been there. So, you know, I didn't know where I was going because I was just part of the car. All these kids pick up their little things and we go another 200 feet and then we turn right, you know. And I thought, how did they know that? Well, of course, they had their smartphones and they had it figured out right to the end. But it was good. Thank you very much. Anyone else for the good of the cause here? We might be able to close a little early. Well, it's 104 degrees someplace, so enjoy this. This is called summer, if you remember. And we'll see you again, I guess, in September. Well, when do we do this again?
November.
November, okay.